Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
All right, here on a Wednesday, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker, and pleased to be joined now by my broadcast partner on the Bills Radio Network, his radio color analyst and former Bills center, Eric Wood, joining us. Eric Wood's appearances presented by Campbell's Chunky Soup. Big, craveable favorites collide in Chunky Soup's new Mac line, featuring flavors like Buffalo-style Chicken Mac, Chili Dog Mac, and Beefy Mac. Stock up for game day now at your local Wegmans. Chunky soup that eats like a meal. All right, Eric, we've had a day to kind of digest it, let our emotions calm down a bit after a performance that didn't meet expectations in Atlanta on Monday night. What do you think the approach is going into a bye week off a performance like that? You want to still examine all the things you would normally examine. How much does the loss and the performance in that loss maybe impact where they're digging?
I mean, regardless of the result on Monday night, they were going to do a lot of self-scouting, see if they have certain tendencies, look at different weaknesses that pop up throughout, you know, whatever part of the season, ideally your bye weeks later in the year. But, you know, six games into the season, you have enough newer guys playing that, I don't know, maybe you want it earlier in the season so you can take time to go back and self-evaluate. When you're right into that next game plan each and every week, it can be hard to go back and say, out of this personnel group, we are 85% run. Teams are keying in on this. When we line up in this defensive alignment, we have these tendencies and teams are picking up on it. And I know that there's staff members outside of, you know, your traditional position coaches that will look at those week in and week out, but this gives you extended time and allows the position coaches, the coordinator, Sean McDermott, to go back and look at any tendencies, what's popping up. And so based upon the results of the last two games and some things we saw creeping into those weeks, this bye week comes, I guess, at a good time. Sometimes you want to wash that taste out of your mouth, but it comes at a good time for them to evaluate where they are right now. I mean, realistically, yes, there's concerns, no doubt about it. There's also concerns around most organizations in the NFL. And if you look at current Super Bowl odds, the Bills and the Chiefs are tied for the best chance to win the Super Bowl. Now, it doesn't exempt either team from needing to, you know, figure stuff out along the way. But we've done this before. I mean, if you look back at 2017, we make the playoffs, and I'm not using that season as a benchmark for this team, but we had the worst three-game stretch point differential-wise in franchise history. And then even dating back to 2020, we've always lost two games in a row that have looked like clunkers, and it doesn't make them excusable, and you don't want them to happen, but I have faith in the organization that they'll be able to rectify some things. I was listening earlier on my way home from somewhere, and I thought we would, you know, dig in on patio furniture and whatnot like you guys were earlier, but we're starting off right with the good stuff.
We started out with that without you, sorry. Let's talk a little bit. Most of the conversation has been the injuries defensively and the offense's inability, or they stopped being able to score points. It's just started to look like a heavy lift. And a lot of people have their own ideas about, hey, let's try, you know, move Coleman around. Let's get the running backs involved more. Let's try different personnel combinations. How much of this and how much of the struggles of late could be fixed if they just had all their guys healthy?
I think it makes a significant factor. I mean, on both sides of the ball, when you look at the amount of injuries that we've had and how it's affected game plans and personnel groupings that you can use throughout a game. I mean, you asked more about the offense side of the football there. I mean, defensively, gutsy effort, especially by those three defensive tackles to play the amount of snaps they did. You go into a game with four, you lose Daquan. That's a tough situation to be in. You got Jordan Phillips, who joined the team after training camp and was out for a week because of personal matters, and then Ed Oliver's just returning off an injury, and then you have a rookie in Deion Walker, who some thought we'd have to ease in because of the back concerns that dropped him to the fourth round for the Bills to be able to pick him up. But on the offensive side of the football, injuries are definitely playing a factor. I mean, when you look at the last game with Samuel out, and you think about, you know, just the speed factor that he can bring to an offense, Palmer leaves the game, Kincaid not being out there, those are big pieces for you. And Samuel maybe not as big as the other two just based upon how they use him throughout a game, but those are significant players to be out. And it allowed Atlanta to, you know, take away a lot of the passing game throughout the game. And also, I mean, give Jeff Ulbrich, the defensive coordinator, credit. They blitzed, I believe, on 60% of Josh Allen's dropbacks, and it just seemed that it got them out of sync. And then, you know, this offensive line, one of the best in the NFL, when you're not sure if they're blitzing on each play, it makes it harder to do your just assignment when they don't blitz because you're worried about what the look is and maybe not necessarily about your technique. So learning experience across the board. I'm assuming next time a team wants to light them up and it's a copycat league, I'd assume other teams will try and approach the Bills offense in that way, especially in obvious pass situations. I expect this Bills team to have better answers. Now you can be more efficient on first and second down, not hurt yourself with penalties and other things that lead you to those obvious passing situations that Josh Allen was just under a lot of duress and he just did not look comfortable. Sean McDermott said after the game, you know, just we're making it too hard on him. It's not easy for him right now. And I get that, but give the Falcons some credit there. They had a solid game plan and they got a bunch of good pass rushers. And so I am in the camp though, that I do think we can move Keon Coleman around, and he's a second year player. He got some confidence after week one, didn't have the production he wanted the next few games. He gets suspended again and misses some time early in the Patriots game. I'm not saying we need to replace Shakir in the slot, but maybe moving him around. And at this point, I'm sure it's working in practice because we're seeing it during the games, but those 50-50 balls that we're trying to give him against some of the better corners on each team each and every week, they're just not working right now. So how do we get him going? Because we need him to be a factor moving forward. Is it confidence that comes from maybe getting him in the slot more, moving him around a little bit, toss him a screen here and there, just something to get him going, because we need him to be a factor.
Eric, one thing you and I have discussed a little bit off air is how the energy and the sense of urgency at the beginning of games for this football team has seemingly been absent the better part of the last three games. And I don't have to tell you, being a former player, that you know you've got to bring just as much as emotional investment to a game as physical investment in this league. The margins are too narrow, and if you're not juiced up to play and ready to go, you're going to get run over. And I think it was very clear on Monday night that Atlanta was juiced to play, and the Bills did not match that emotional intensity. How do you recapture that as a team, and maybe how can internal player-driven leadership pull that out of their teammates so as an entire 11-man unit, you can see it and feel it on the field at the beginning of the game?
Yeah, and I think some of that comes with success as well. You know, we've talked about that before when people have critiqued the Bills sideline. Sometimes is really energetic and they're jumping around, and other times they're not. Well, it's hard when you're not making plays and you're hurting yourself with penalties and turnovers to get up in those moments, or to, you know, celebrate a good hit or whatever it may be. You know, this is a Bills team that's going to get every team's best shot. Just, you got the league MVP from last year at quarterback, the success that they've had, started the season 4-0. They're going to get every team's best shot, and they got to understand that week in and week out from a game planning perspective. And as far as the energy and intensity, these road environments, they're not all going to be, you know, Bills Mafia showed up for that last game, but the Atlanta crowd, even if it was 50% of the building, they were into it. They were charged up, understanding that this is one of the best teams in the NFL coming in. So, you know, after they fumble on the first play of the game, will we recover it? The Bills sideline's going nuts. And then you're deflated with the penalty. And then you're deflated when you get gashed on some runs. And you're deflated when the Penix is picking you apart with guys running wide open in zone coverage. And so I don't know necessarily that this is a group that isn't coming out of the tunnel juiced up and ready to roll. It's just the frustration bouts, and you're sitting on the sideline trying to figure it out, and you're not having fun with the guys. You're sitting there thinking, I mean, how many times can we shoot ourselves in the foot here? And so, you know, to me, I put it as much just on the frustration of this is a team that just keeps self-inflicting wounds on themselves, and it's hard to, you know, get up in those moments.
If you had a priority list and you're the Bills coaching staff, what is the priority list for this bye week?
Figure out what we do well, double down on it, see how we can then build off of that. You know, offensively, it seems like, you know, working around the run game, we saw it early in the game, and then we saw it definitely on that first drive of the second half, doubling down on, you know, James Cook and maybe getting those other two going as well in the run game. And then building off of that throughout the game. And I'm not saying it's got to be all heavy personnel. Build some run packages out of 11 personnel or 12 out of the shotgun with Kincaid split out. But using that run game to open up some of the guys and get them in better spots in the pass game and not rely on as much of a traditional drop back pass game, especially while you have guys out of receiver or guys that, you know, I'm not saying they're, you know, it's common practice right now to say the Bills receivers can't separate. And you go back and cherry pick plays on film where we either had guys open and Josh left the pocket or was under duress and couldn't find those guys. But to get that passing game going, it's likely, you know, doubling down on the run game, especially when teams are lighter and smaller, like last week's matchup against the Falcons. And then defensively, you got to figure out, one, who's going to be healthy, what you're going to get from Hoyt and Ogunjobi coming off of suspension, you know. But right now, I don't see guys making plays in zone defense. It's almost like they're dropping to a spot, and I have my assignment done, and I'm in this spot. But you're just not seeing the almost like Micah Hyde-type plays where, okay, you got a crossing route, and maybe he's deep middle, and he jumps it. You're just not seeing those things where there's just so much cushion. Sean McDermott, I believe, said we went to more man defense in the second half, and I don't know those exact percentages, but you could see it visibly. It appeared we were running more man-to-man defense, and maybe that's the strength of this secondary. Maybe that's where we're going to be in a better position where we're not giving as much cushion, got to be able to tackle better, I saw it yesterday. Some of the long, I mean, we give up the most yards after contact in the entire NFL.
Yep.
And it's not close. I mean, just, it's simply not close. The Chargers are like a full yard behind us in that regard. Now, that's skewed on a, you know, a couple huge ones. I get that. But we got to be able to tackle better. And so I think getting healthier gives you some extra bodies on defense, and then just figuring out what the identity of this defense is going to be. And if the guys on the back end aren't comfortable making plays in our traditional zone looks that we've had success with in the past, maybe it's getting to more man-to-man defense or different zone shells that allow us to jump those crossers that go right behind the linebacker level that we've seen just kill us over and over, or, you know, guys sitting, you know, in between the corners, linebackers, where it's just too easy pitch and catch out there at times.
Last one for me, Eric. Carolina on the horizon, and I know it's a team still trying to find itself and establish their own identity under Dave Canales, but he does know how to call an offense and sequence plays. He's good at that. And in their three wins this season, they have scored 30, 27, and 30 last week. Chuba Hubbard's supposed to come back as well, so they might have a 1-2 punch there with Rico Dowdle, who's gone over 200 all-purpose yards each of the last two games, and Chuba Hubbard. And we know what has ailed this Bills defense. So I think some people might, being unfamiliar with Carolina, might think of them as an also-ran, but they've got two straight wins. They play the Jets this week. There's a good chance they're going to be facing a team on a three-game winning streak and feeling pretty good about themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. The Bills are going to have to be ready to roll, and we saw it over these last couple weeks. I don't care who the opponent is in this league. You got to be ready to roll, and you got to go out and execute big plays because every team's got talent. And, you know, we're sitting here last week talking about give Drake May and Diggs credit, and this week, I'm sure throughout the week, you guys have been saying give London and Penix and Bijan their credit. They made plays on us. But at some point, we got to make those plays ourselves on both sides of the ball. We've got to stop the penalties. The penalties combined with the turnovers, combined with the missed tackles, it's like everything adds up. But the penalties have come at almost the most inopportune times, right before an interception against the Patriots where it backs you up. It, you know, the 81-yard Bijan Robinson run comes after Ed Oliver, Rousseau. One of the two had a sack. So instead of second and long, now it's first and five. I mean, they've just crushed themselves with penalties. But, no, they got to be ready to roll against Carolina. You're going to go down there, and there's going to be a ton of Bills fans there like we always have in Charlotte, which almost could tick off the home team even more. It's a whole lot of fun having a Bills Mafia party in someone's stadium afterwards. But that home team's going to fight like hell to not let that happen.
Good stuff, Eric. Thanks, man.
Enjoy your bye weekend.
Absolutely. Appreciate it. You guys too.
All right. That's Eric Wood joining us, as he does after every Bills game. And it's brought to you by Campbell's Chunky Soup. You see all the yards that Bijan ran up on this defense, and then you look at Rico Dowdle the last 2 weeks. And granted, he was not playing good defenses the last 2 weeks, but one of them is one of the same defenses the Bills went up against, Miami, where he ran up over 200 all-purpose yards. And then last week against Dallas, who really are nothing to write home about on defense either, and he rolled up 206 all-purpose yards last week. And he still didn't win NFC Player of the Week because Bijan got it. He had 238 all-purpose yards. So you have another guy to be almost as concerned about as you did this Monday night.
Yeah, and you got your work cut out for you just as much to get it done. It'll be interesting to see them play this weekend, the Carolina Panthers, of course, I'm talking about, because they do play the Jets, and the Jets are desperate to win a game. They're in New York. They're on the road, and you're going to learn some things. Can the Jets stop Dowdle? Well, we'll see.
They also have, you know, a big rookie wide receiver on the outside, Tet McMillan.
Tet McMillan's a big dude.
Every bit as big as Drake London, and he runs better than Drake.
Yeah.
6'4", 219, and he is already their number one option in the passing game after they made him a top 10 draft selection this season. Going to squeeze a phone call in here for someone who's been waiting patiently, and we go to Bob down in Florida. What's up, Bob? Bob, are you there? Bob, you're on. You got to stop listening to your radio. All right, I got to put you on hold.
Thanks anyway, Bob.
We'll get back to Bob maybe after the break. We'll step aside, take a break here as we're asking you, what's your one bye week want for the Bills? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We're back to the phones next here on One Bills Live. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Again, I don't see it as cute stuff. I see it as plays that, like I said, we've given a lot of sweeps to Elijah Moore this year, and they've been good for us. But there's timing in the situations with it. We came out of last year, and you know, we did a lot of just QB sneaks and teams packing it up in there, and we knew that that was going to have to be another element to our short yardage. Was being able to get the ball out on the perimeters.
Joe Brady defending the decision to hand the ball to Elijah Moore. So they've got him on a few sweeps this year. He's got 5 carries, 25 yards, and a touchdown. Moore does this year. Joe Marino joining us on the Western Hotline to chat about the Bills-Falcons game, the All-22, the bye week, and all that comes with it. Joe, good morning. Jeremy and Joe, how are you today, Joe?
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm doing well, and I certainly hope that you are.
We are. We'll get to a lot of stuff today. We'll get to some stuff on the defense and the trade deadline and what's going on there. But I think, you know, after watching your All-22 review of this game, you've got a little bit of a different story to paint than maybe just the 30,000-foot view of no one's getting open, that this game and this offensive struggle lays primarily, with the coordinator and the quarterback.
Yeah, I've pretty disappointed in Joe Brady's plan for this game. It was pretty widely understood that Atlanta had the highest blitz rate in the league going into this game. And they blitzed like crazy. They blitzed on 60% of Josh Allen's dropbacks. And it didn't look like an offense that was ready to handle the blitz. And I think you could point to some protection breakdowns where Atlanta got them on some load pressures, and you got some issues with Josh Allen's eyes and not being in the right place. I think you have an issue with answers not being available. And when I think you have that many layers to the issue, you go back to your coordinator and realize that he just didn't have the right stuff for this game. And then within that, the sequencing of the play calls and what he was trying to accomplish just didn't measure up with what Atlanta was presenting. And so it's a pretty frustrating situation. There's, you know, it's never one thing in football, but I put most of my blame here on Joe Brady, just not having the right stuff for his offense going into this game, and certainly not pulling the right strings during it.
What did you think was missing? Like, what should they have been doing more of, you think, that would have been more impactful?
Well, I think it comes back to just a readiness for the style of defense that Atlanta was going to play. And I think they're a blitz aggressive defense that has a lot of speed but they're small. They're a very small defense, maybe the smallest defense in the league. And the Bills, in the second half, they got into some gap runs. And gap runs, that just means that you're running to a specific gap and the blocking structure is designed to create displacement and move bodies out of the way. Where a zone run, you're going to block to a zone and you're relying on angles and the running back to make good decisions. Gap runs is about getting downhill and moving bodies out of the way. And the Bills were able to do that at a high level. In fact, in the game, they ran the ball, or James ran it 17 times, 14 were gap runs out of the 17. And the Bills, in terms of yards before contact, second best in the league this past week, and they just didn't have enough of a commitment to it. And you saw both touchdown drives really be influenced because of that rushing style. I know that the first touchdown drive was really about the bomb to Palmer and then a great throw to Dawson Knox. But the structure of the run scheme where they're in 22 personnel, two backs, two tight ends on that first play with one receiver being Palmer, and you show them that this is coming, and I'm sure Atlanta was pretty concerned about that, being able to stop that. And you get a one-on-one, and Palmer runs a great route, and Josh launches a bomb down the field, you eventually score a touchdown. But you know, that Ray Davis touchdown was, they ran gap schemes all the way down the field and got to the, you know, pretty close to the red zone there, maybe just inside. And you know, they run play action and Reggie Gilliam's play side, and they wham him across the formation and the linebacker goes with him and it opens this edge for Ray Davis. You dump it to him, he scores a touchdown. That had to be the foundation of everything you did in the game. And when it was, you scored. And when it wasn't, you didn't. And obviously, you're without Kincaid, you're without Palmer pretty quick. I think in a game like this, Curtis Samuel probably matters. And to not lean into the best opportunity that you had to attack this defense, to me, is really goofy by this offensive coordinator.
Joe, do you think, you know, sometimes for fans watching a game, like anybody out there, cute is a play. What you're talking about here, do you feel like the entire game plan got cute instead of just doing the thing you should have done?
Yeah, I do. I do think that. And, you know, not only not coming in with, I think, the right ideas to beat this defense, but then within the game, falling in love with some stuff that just didn't make any sense to me. You should never be in love with isolated routes in man coverage with Keon Coleman against A.J. Terrell. That's a mismatch for Atlanta. The favor is Atlanta. That's a good man coverage corner. That's not a good man coverage separator at receiver. Why are you in love with those isolated opportunities? They're wasted downs. I mean, the Elijah Moore play, it's well documented. Sean McDermott was very direct about how silly that play was. And look, I think we wanted counters from the tush push, and that was, right? They have Reggie Gilliam right there behind Josh Allen. It looks like a tush push, and they attack the edge on the handoff, and you know, maybe it was blocked well. But the point is, you're just not repped enough handing the ball to Elijah Moore in a game situation, or Dawson Knox, right? So you see this fail 2 weeks in a row really give you a game-changing play for the other team because you had an unforced error. And ultimately, James Cook, just give the ball to – just run the ball with James Cook and live with it, right? You got this physical offensive line that's big against a small front and a great running back. Live with that. Don't live with handing the ball to Elijah Moore and relying on perimeter blockers to get it done when you have that offensive line and that running back.
Are we, I kind of joked about this earlier with Joe, are we starting to watch the death of Everybody Eats? Because it feels like the last couple weeks, it's been a lot of more Cook, more Kincaid, stop messing around, these are your best players. Maybe more Shakir as well. Like,
yeah.
You're always going to diversify. You're not feeding a true number one, but this idea that everybody's got to be involved has got to go.
Well, I think... there's so many layers to that. I think you want to get the ball to your best players, right?
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
Anybody can watch the Bills and realize that their best players are Cook, Shakir, Kincaid, right? Those are the best four playmakers you have. And then I really like Palmer, and I thought it was going to be a big Palmer game and got hurt on a second catch. Coleman's going to, to me, always be a very specific type player. So, yeah, you should prioritize getting the ball to those players. And then everyone else is going to be, you know, ancillary, and you know, you factor them in to an extent. But I think ultimately this offense and why it would be successful throwing the football, well, of course, it's Josh Allen, but from a structure perspective, it's really about how the scheme creates opportunities, right? And the Bills do not have great separators. Nobody's going to argue that they have great separators, but that doesn't mean that not anybody's open on a play, right? That's, to me, a very false narrative. coming out of this game, and I have put together plenty of film that will prove that that I'm right about that. But when you have your best separators weren't available, Kincaid and Palmer are your best separators, and you didn't have them in this game. So you're not going to go route up anybody, right, with that group of players. But the scheme, right, based on route concepts and the quarterback's eyes being in the right place, it will get people open, and then you just have to make the right decision and throw the football. And so because of that, I think it leads to kind of necessitating some everybody eats, because you are relying on the concept more than you are the player,
gotcha,
especially when you're down your best separators from a route running perspective. So it's some structural stuff that I think feeds into everybody eats more than anything.
Okay. Joe Marino joining us on the Locked On Bills podcast. Joe, I want to read you something that our buddy Benjamin Solak tweeted yesterday. I know you have a lot of respect for what he does and have worked with him before. He wrote yesterday that regarding the Bills, watching their film, that the Bills defense, the Bills should be pursuing a safety deadline trade more aggressively than any deadline buyer of any position of the last few seasons. Would you agree? How bad is it?
Yeah, I think it's going to be – it's hard to win right now with Taylor Rapp and the way that he's playing. And then you have a high-variance player in Bishop where, you know, he's going to make some plays. He's going to make the mistakes, which I think is to be expected. But you were supposed to have stable play from Taylor Rapp, and you just don't. Whether that's coverage or fitting the run or tackling, it's just not there. And so, yes, I am eager and hopeful to see something like that happen. I don't think it will. I don't think that the Bills are going to trade for a safety and start him. I think it's too much of a trust position, whether you like it or not. Like, I'm not saying that I agree with it. I'm just telling you what I think the team's mindset is. I think it's too much of a trust position, and they're not going to trade for somebody in the middle of the season and put them in there to start. So I think your hope there is that they believe that Jordan Poyer can help this defense. And, you know, I think that says a lot, because I don't think much of that idea either. But you watch Taylor Rapp play, and it's very difficult to reconcile the playing time that he has. So I agree that you need upgrades at safety. I don't think they're coming. And I think more than anything, what you have to do is get away from some of your coverage philosophies. This team is really getting gashed with spot drop zone coverage. And so, you know, it's kind of like playing a video game where, I don't know, everyone's played Madden. And so you see, you pick up coverage and you see the little areas that each player is supposed to get to. And that's what they do. They don't adjust, right? So they're very just hyper-focused on getting to landmarks. And that's not playing with vision. That's not playing with feel. You have to be willing to squeeze and tighten and drive on routes, and they're just getting to landmarks. And it's creating free access all over the field. And so you're watching this Bills defense, particularly early in the game, and they got away from this in the second half. That's why they were way better in the second half. You're watching this Bills defense, and whether it's Atlanta or other times throughout the year, and you're like, everyone's open. Everybody's wide open. And then it brings up questions about, well, why can't the Bills get these players wide open? Well, that's because they're not facing spot drop zone coverage. They're facing man coverage. And the spot drop zone is just leading to free access all over the field because they're not adjusting from their landmarks. They're not driving out routes. They're not together. And so, yeah, well, get better safeties, right? Sure. But ultimately, I think it's a philosophy that's flawed that I think is killing this team. And so, yes, I want better safeties, but I think they have to get away from this spot drop zone coverage because it's just creating free access and they're getting gashed.
Trickle down effect there. Like, should we be talking changes at linebacker as well? I mean, the Bills have a bye week, so if you want to talk about the biggest changes you can think of that you can muster midseason, should there be a change at linebacker?
Well, I think Shaq Thompson's clearly been the Bills' best linebacker this year. So I think whatever means he's on the field, I think you have to be there. I'm really disappointed with Terrell Bernard. He's always going to have limitations as a downhill player. Those have been as advertised. He's the reason the Bills gave up an 81-yard touchdown to Bijan Robinson. He's the A-gap defender, and he took on the block with the poor fundamentals, was slow to read, and was out of his gap, and the Bills got creased. More than anything, the redeeming part of Terrell Bernard is supposed to be the coverage. And he doesn't have it this year. He's not playing with good feel or vision. He's spot dropping and just getting the spots and overrunning. Like, he's spot dropping so bad that he's like continuing to get to his landmarks while allowing a guy to uncover behind him or next to him. It's just there's no feel. And so I don't know. I don't think the Bills are going to do anything there. It's their team captain. They love Terrell Bernard. So I'm not anticipating that, but I think the thing that I'm looking for is as much to Shaq Thompson as we can get, I think is probably what's the most helpful at linebacker.
Yeah. Do you think Thompson at middle linebacker and Bernard moving to the will is too much of a lift middle of the season to keep Bernard on the field but put him somewhere else?
That's an attractive idea for me, Joe. I'm into that for sure. And I think that's a really good idea. Like, if you want to preserve your commitment to Terrell Bernard, I think that he's optimized way more as the weak side player than the mic. But I don't know if the Bills agree with me on that.
Joe, I think if we're like looking big picture, your tone, one of our questions we're asking today is like, hey, they lose games, back-to-back games. Yeah. It happens, blip on the radar, they kind of rally. Without talking about, you know, like, are they still going to win the division? Sure, maybe. They'll probably be good. They'll win a bunch of games. But would you say your concern with their build right now for a Super Bowl caliber team is more shaken this year than maybe previous years?
Yeah, I think so. I think some of that's eased by looking across the league and being keenly aware of all the problems that exist. You know, who you want to bring up, we'll get into their problems too, and I could sell you on them being a team that can't do it, right? But yeah, I do have concerns about what this team has in terms of getting out of their annual lull, right? It's just really true. The Bills have an annual lull. Here it is. How do they get out of it? They always get out of it, right? Can they do it this year? Well, I think my concerns are way more rooted in just like architecturally what you are. Not as much on offense. I think there's a good path forward there. I think they have answers there. But here's what I'll say. And Jeremy, I hope that we will have this conversation. I'm sure we will. Because I know that you're a little more interested in upgrades in the secondary.
Yeah.
And I think I'm more interested in the upgrade as that receiver.
All right.
And this is going to be a big surprise, maybe. I don't know. But I don't think
you'll have to talk to him into it too much.
No, you definitely don't have to talk me into it. I mean, I could certainly get there. Is it because, I mean, the main root of it for me is always, I want to lean into the path that I'm going to win games. And with this defense structurally, I might have to score 41 a game. Mm-hmm. So I got to find a way to do that.
Yes, I think you're on to mostly what I'm thinking, but ultimately what it comes down to is I think this defense is completely game script dependent. And Sean McDermott says it all the time. The Falcons or whatever team is allowed to be two-dimensional, right? Well, how do you get them one-dimensional? You have more points than you have them chasing it. And I'm not saying defense, schmefense. I am not saying that. But I think because of the structure of defense that you have and the personnel that you have defensively, your best way to get your defense in good situations is to be able to score a lot of points because they are game script dependent. If not, you're going to be in neutral game scripts, and when that's the case, your run defense is a problem, right? Like it's the issues there are very deep, and you're playing this coverage, you know, where you're pretty soft, and you need that margin for error. You need to create urgency for that other team to the point where they're scared of being able to keep up with Josh Allen. And boy, that was my whole narrative. I feel silly for my analysis the last 2 weeks because I think it's really the Bills just didn't align with it. It's like, I don't think Drake May can outscore Josh Allen for 60 minutes if the Bills play offense like this. Same thing with Michael Penix. Like 24 points should not be enough to beat the Bills. They scored 14.
Yeah.
I think because of the way you play defense, your best opportunity is to control game scripts, and I think that starts with scoring points. And I think they need too much on defense
so
to fix it with one move. So I don't know. I'm more in on the receiver piece, to be honest with you.
I mean, I love what I'm hearing. There's one more follow-up to that. Can they, if they do that, should they also flip the idea that they want to play low-event football, right? They want to be ball control. They want to bleed clock. They want there to be fewer possessions to protect this game script defense. Should they ditch that, and should it just be, you know, all gas, no brakes?
Oh, man.
More gas, maybe.
Well, I think you probably need a little bit more gas.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's funny, we talk about low event, right? That's the hockey phrase.
Yeah. Yeah, low event.
I said that a few years ago and it wrecked my world. I've been thinking about it ever since, and you just brought it up and my head's spinning. It's funny, you talk about low event football, and really that's to mitigate another team, right? Like they have a superstar quarterback, you want them on the sideline. The Bills have to play low event defense or low event
offense to protect their defense, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can't put them right back out there all the time. So I have concerns about that as well. But if that leads to more mistakes, you know, I think that's what they need. They need offenses to make more mistakes. How do you get that to happen?
Yeah.
I think you got to put pressure on them.
Joe Marino. Hit that horn, baby. I heard it. Listen. Thanks, Joe.
Listen. All right, guys.
Thanks, Thank Joe.
You. Joe Marino. We'll talk a little more today. We got our Bill Squad show coming up today.
I believe he just stole your train.
Listen.
You got off the train to go get lunch, and Joe hopped in the conductor seat, and it's driving away.
Listen, if you want to know what happens is I sit in the front seat of that train shouting safety out the window.
There's no safety train.
As the train thunders on. What about safety? What about?
It's like a safety sidecar.
I don't know what they're going to do. Whatever. Oh, we're very late.
Yeah, we got it.
Always a great conversation with Joel, though. But, like, you know, the warts this year look bigger. They've got more work to do to pull out of their lull. Let's see what Howard thinks, top of the hour. He's going to pick the Bills. We'll see if he's measured and calm. You know, like Howard always is. He's always very measured and calm. He's going to pick the Bills. It's coming up here on WGR.
It's all Bills all day. Buffalo Bills Football Friday, exclusively on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Salino Law. Car crash? Call Salino. Call the 8s. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Crosby's hometown fuel, game day ready since 1922.
We've had some good moments, but I also want to kind of look under the hood a little bit more and making sure that we've got everything underneath in terms of the foundation.
These windows, there was about a 2 or 3 year window with Buffalo. Maybe it's closed.
Now it seems like there's a regression that's taking place, and it could be because of what you just said. He's bereft of weapons. He's trying to play hero ball again because he knows if he doesn't do something, they ain't going to win.
Sitting at 4-2 going into a bye week. You know, at any point you can have a winning season, you know, almost halfway through the year. I know we're not quite halfway, but I think you'll take those odds.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Good morning. Happy Friday, Football Friday. Jeremy and Joe, Joe Calley producing. Owen the Parlay Killer Parker is here as well. You killed a parlay last night. Maybe we'll recap that at some point. We're one away. He's on an incredible run of just solo killing our parlays.
If you tuned in every week and just said, I'm going to go against what that guy says.
Yeah, the parlay minus
You are kind of giving people good betting advice. You just have to know which side to be on.
There's value. Anyway, 803-0550. It is Football Friday, brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino. Call the 8s, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Crosby's hometown fuel, game day ready since 1922. The Big O, Jerry Ostrowski, joins us on the Western Hotline. Former Buffalo Bills offensive lineman, 100 games. And Jerry and I talk every week on the Bills Squad show, and every once in a while I say, like, why don't you come on GR and chat with us? So he's up early and on ready to talk Bills. Jerry, good morning.
Good morning. What's going on, fellas?
You know, we're talking Bills, and we're also doing that thing, you know, every once in a while you could just have a conversation as a football fan. And if you watch the game last night, you see Chase and Higgins carve up the Steelers. And, you know, I think it's natural, not to say that you could make it happen and the Bills are in some sort of horrible situation, but you just dream about having like a Jamar Chase, right? Like a Chase and Higgins.
Right.
Chase got 20 targets in this game and destroyed the Steelers.
23.
Yeah. And Joe Flacco walks into Cincinnati and just rolls Pittsburgh. It was a sight to see, you know?
You know, I think that sometimes we get a little bit, we forget some things as far as the NFL goes. And when coaching matters a lot, and there's a lot of things like that. But honestly, at the end of the day, it still is a player-driven league. It's about the players. It's about big-time players. It's about guys getting the ball in their hand, making plays, all those things. And, you know, when you have two guys like that on your offense, like they do in Cincinnati, it's obvious, you know, they just went plug-and-play quarterback. They found one that understood the system, and obviously Flacco understood the game plan, which is get the ball to him as much as possible, and you know, big plays are going to happen. And you know, I just think that sometimes we forget that. I mean, and coaches will tell you that as well. I mean, there's a lot of really good coaches in this world, but they've also coached a lot of really good players, and at the end of the day, you got to have guys that can make plays.
Jerry, when you look at this Bills offense, you know, 2 weeks in a row, I think we've hit a bit of an offensive lull. And, you know, the Bills have had their lulls over the years. I don't know how often it's been the offense that has really stepped in it. What do you see that is going wrong with this offensive unit, and what can they do to fix it?
Well, you know, I don't think it's necessarily just broken, okay? I think that, you know, obviously that's – you get fan reaction and stuff like that. And I think, like we've talked about before, Jeremy, when it is the offense, it becomes alarming. I mean, we've kind of gotten to the point where when the offense or the defense struggles, we're like, ah, yeah, that's fine. We know offense will be okay, you know. But I just think a little bit – sometimes you get a little complacent in what you're doing. It works. And you don't evolve week to week as much as you should, and get into a point where you get stale. And I keep saying over and over again, I mean, these guys in the league are really, really good. They watch film. You get 3 to 4 games a week of pass games. It's a copycat league. They're gonna see what others are doing. And if you're not evolving as a team and adding different things week to week, all of a sudden it becomes hard. You know, I've watched this offensive line. Aaron Cromer adds blocking schemes weekly. I mean, he's really good at adjustments, really good at adding some things. You know, but that has to go throughout the whole offense. Everybody.
Oh, we're losing Jerry here. I'll pick him up and try to get him back here. 803-0550. Stay on hold. We get Jerry reconnected, talking about the offense and kind of reinventing itself, and each week, you know, sticking with things that work.
Joe Brady did say earlier in the week, by the way, that, like, don't expect it to look like a totally different offense. Now, we'll see to what extent that's true, right? Like, the fact that they would be exactly the same, no new wrinkles, I don't know about that, but that he didn't really want to give in when asked about it earlier in the week as to, like, yeah, we really need to change things on offense. But then there's McDermott saying we got to get under the hood. So if McDermott goes into a meeting, it's like, yeah, I'm watching the tape. This isn't working. We can't just do the things that we've been doing all the way through.
Yeah.
Then maybe that's how you get your change.
Maybe. It is always interesting, the dynamic of the head coach. I mean, the buck stops with the head coach. He's in charge. He's the boss. So that's right. how it works. But the dynamic of McDermott saying, yeah, we've talked about some of his problems. And if you're a Bills fan that hears that, you might think, like, who talks to you about the ones that you've got on your defense? Because you've got some on your defense, you know. But I guess it goes unsaid. McDermott would know those, and, you know, the buck stops with him. Jerry Beck. Hey, Jerry, sorry about that. You're talking about, you know, the offense and whether it's predictability or adding new wrinkles week to week.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you have to progress offensively scheme-wise. I don't care how good you are. I don't care what type of players you have. The guys in this league are good. They study film. They see what others are doing. I think teams have done a very good job defensively against the Bills and containing Allen more so this year than they have in the past. And, you know, if you try to keep doing the same things because it worked, sometimes that's rough. And, you know, that's why I just think they're in a rut, because you got to progress. You know, it's one of those things. A buddy of mine once said, if you don't like change, you're really not going to like irrelevance. And that's kind of what you're looking at.
Jerry, this matchup against Atlanta, it was a lot of blitz. They got a lot of talk going into it, and then that's how it kind of played out. If other teams were to try to do the same thing, maybe like, hey, Atlanta, it worked. Let's try to do the same thing. How would you think the Bills would do it differently? Whether that would be running or the quick pass game finding its legs. If teams were to try to copycat Atlanta, how do you think the Bills would try to respond to that?
Well, I think first and foremost, you got to look at Atlanta's personnel, and they weren't big on defense, but they were fast, aggressive, they blitzed, right? So the first thing is, if a team's going to attack you with a ton of blitzing, you've got to run gap scheme runs. You've got to run power. You got to run counter. You got to control the gaps. And blitzes beat up wide zone and things like that, because when you're running zone, you're relying on movement and things, and there's uncertainty. When you run gap schemes, it's downhill. You have duo, you got double teams, and you can control it. The other thing is, in pass protection, and watching this last Atlanta game, I thought they did some things pass protection wise to control the blitz. it just wasn't executed very well. And that's got to change. I mean, you've got to get execution better up front as far as, you know, your blitz protections. When you start having guys do a bunch of blitzes, it's not so much, Joe, just getting the ball out quick, which you want to do, but you got to run, slide protections. You got to, same thing as you do in a running game, you got to control gaps and then, you know, go from there. So, yeah, I mean, some of the stuff pass pro wise, I thought they tried to do, they just didn't execute it. And then we didn't get to the gap running schemes until the second half. So that's what I would do a little bit different when you're playing teams like that that want to blitz and that are fast.
Jerry Ostrowski joining us on the Western Hotline. Jerry, how about Dalton Kincaid? They missed him in this game, and it's year three for Kincaid. I feel like Bills fans maybe have been waiting for the statistical breakout, but maybe this is the year where we finally really seen them using him in a way where their offense is at its best when he's on the field. How much of a difference does it make for him to not be out there?
Oh, it was huge. You know, like you said, Jerry, I mean, we've been waiting for the emergence of Kincaid since we drafted him, and it hasn't been terrible. And I think he's been pretty good, but third year, you know, you kind of expect an understanding of what's going on. And obviously him and Josh spent a bunch of time this offseason. Tight ends are so, I mean, I've been preaching this for a couple of weeks now because I do sports radio in Oklahoma and we're talking about the Sooners, and that's our professional sports team in Oklahoma is the Oklahoma Sooners. But, you know, they don't have very good tight ends. And in today's football, you have to have them because you got to win the middle of the field. The mismatches you get with tight end usage, it's huge. And it's frustrating sometimes for me as a Bills fan because it seems like we get a player like Dalton, merges, and then he goes away for a while because of injury. So it'd be nice to have one stay on the field all season, but, you know, that's not his fault. It's football, but hopefully he's back soon because I think it was obvious, guys, without him on the field this week, Josh wasn't very comfortable without knowing where Dalton was.
Jerry Ostrowski on the Western Hotline chatting about the Bills' bye week. Defensively, Jerry, what now? One thing you and I've talked about a lot is while this run defense is the headline is run defense is a mess, you've not been upset with the way that they play up front, that the defensive line is really not the culprit here.
No, I think that the defensive line has been playing at a pretty good clip, honestly. I mean, I'm not saying that all positions don't make mistakes, but when you look at that group, and I think the addition of Joey Bosa has been huge. I think he's given them a big veteran presence. It's given Rousseau somebody else to lean on. Rousseau's now healthy, so he's had a couple of good games in a row. And then, of course, the unexpected emergence of Deion Walker has been – he's probably saved it quite a bit for the Bills, considering the injuries they had inside. You know, they had to rely on this guy for, I think, over 50 snaps last week. And we're talking about this offseason of limiting him doing, you know, OTA reps because of his back, right? So, I mean, the emergence of Walker's been huge for the Bills. But, yeah, I think they do a good job of being where they're supposed to be. They're not a two-gap scheme. It's a, you know, they shoot gaps, they play gap control, but they're not going to tie up a bunch of offensive linemen. So the second level guys have had a little bit tough lately. I think Shaq Thompson has really helped us quite a bit. You know, 31-year-old linebacker, used to be in Carolina. I think he does a good job, and honestly he's kind of saved us in some things with some guys beat up. But yeah, I mean, if your second level mesh and that first level don't fit right, you have issues.
What about the third level? How dire is it for you in the secondary and it probably safety specifically right now? How do you see that position kind of evolving as the season goes on here?
Well, I mean, as much as, you know, people like to get on, you know, Cole Bishop, I see Cole Bishop progressing. I mean, he's a young player still. He's learning. I like athleticism. I think he's got willingness, still learning maybe some angles in the NFL, some things he might have got away with it. Utah, he can't get away with the league with the athletes we play against. You know, that other safety spot is concerning. It'll be interesting to see what they do there over the bye week. I know we've heard rumblings of Jordan Poyer. I'd like to think that at some point Rapp can get close to the form that he had last year, because I've loved Taylor Rapp as a safety for us in the past. I mean, I'm a huge advocate of physical, intimidating safeties in the secondary. I mean, I come from, you know, I grew up outside of Philadelphia. It started with Andre Waters and, you know, Brian Dawkins and some of the, you know, those types of guys. And I love that, you know, that style of play in the past. We haven't seen it this year. And for whatever reason, he's struggling. Hopefully we get that soon. But, yeah, there needs to be something there. And it just, it's funny, even with different parts, and they're like, oh, get this guy, get that guy. It's still hard in the secondary because you got to have, you know, cohesion. And how does that all work? And you're just not really seeing that right now out of that Bills secondary.
Jerry Ostrowski. Jerry, thanks for the time, and we'll talk again soon.
Hey, guys, apologize for phone issues. I'm up in the land of Spencer Brown.
All right.
Cedar Falls, Iowa. So going to watch some UNI football this week. But always enjoy the time. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck to the Panthers, UNI Panthers. Is that right?
That is right.
All right.
Panther pride, baby.
Very good. Thanks, Jerry. You can find Jerry, of course, on the Overreaction Buffalo podcast and Bill Squad show as well, part of the Locked On Bills channel. You know, it's funny. Like, this is something that you could think about any time, or if you pay attention to every word the Bills say, which sometimes we do. Is it curious or interesting that rap being such an issue, it's got to be a surprise to them. McDermott, in the preseason, after the preseason game, we're all wondering who's going to play safety. Mm-hmm. It was, we're looking for the guy to play, someone to play next to T-Rap.
Right.
And here we are, and it's like, yeah, T-Rap,
he's the problem.
He's a problem.
Right.
So they've got to be very surprised by that. Is there an injury? Is there he's trying to do too much to cover up for somebody? I don't know. But they're surprised by it. There's no doubt about that, right?
They're definitely surprised by it. The money wasn't big there, but really ever since they signed him, would they sign him to a 3-year deal when they brought him back? He had signed that 1-year deal after starting in LA, and then he signs here, and it's 1 year of being a rotational guy, and then it was, we're bringing him back, and he's the starter.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that great last year. Like, it was,
no,
there were shortcomings last year.
A lot of the numbers pointed to he was actually worse on the field for them than DeMar Hamlin was last year, but it was so close that, like, nobody would ever, you know, you don't have to get up in arms about it. But maybe that he was, maybe that covered it up for him. Like, he maybe wasn't playing that well, but everyone knew Hamlin wasn't a starting safety next to him, that we just didn't pay attention to what was happening on Rapp's side of the field. I mean, a 3-year deal, $10 million. The money is nothing. But you sign a safety to a 3-year deal with guaranteed money involved, you know, you're probably thinking he's going to start for you through the length of that contract. And you're only into the second year of it, so I would think they're surprised. Can they get to a point, though, where they're surprised enough where they take him off the field? He's not Hyde or Poyer.
No.
It should not be so difficult to bench a guy who, you know, a year and a half ago was a rotational piece for you. I don't think it should be like this big, you know, story to take a guy off the field that's making $3 million. I think that's sometimes that's what happens. Curtis Samuel signed a 3-year deal, and oh look, it's not really working out. Well, he's injured, but it's not a big story when he gets benched or is made a healthy inactive or a healthy scratch. It's just kind of a footnote.
There might be an obvious answer to this that I can't think of. Who's the most high profile Bill to have been benched
ever? Like by this coach?
McDermott. In the McDermott Bean era, the most high profile Bill to have been benched. Lose their starting job midseason.
Tyrod Taylor.
That's a correct answer.
He benched. It's a good question. He benched James Cook, kind of, but he was a rookie.
And that's a rotational position.
Right.
Who's been benched?
He never got to Milano last year.
Nope.
I don't know what maybe it is Tyrod Taylor.
It's a long time ago.
It was 8 years ago.
803-0550. We're wide open. We're going to get some instant trivia in. We're going to do the Super Great American Football Friday Frenzy. We're going to talk with you.
I think I have an answer.
Okay.
They eventually, after weeks of him doing nothing, got around to benching Von Miller 2 years ago.
All right, but that was an injury year. That was, he was activated too soon off an injury because they were too desperate.
True.
And it wasn't working.
But he was a big name.
For
he's
sure.
a Hall of Famer.
For
and
sure.
Like, they had to eventually have the conversation of, you're out there, man, and yep. nothing's okay. happening. We've got to get you off.
I do want to give that the disclaimer of, like,
he was
brought
injured.
Him back too early from injury, decided it still wasn't working.
All right, yeah.
But that's not wrong. That is a correct answer to what I asked. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 on WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Paul, I'm not sure you're so inclined here. Paul's game for a good fantasy question or two. I believe him to be.
Just go right ahead. Fantasy, speaking of fantasy, housekeeping from last hour. We talked with Adam Krautwurst about Brock Bowers. I mentioned how he had practiced today. He's listed as doubtful now officially for the game. And Mike Evans practiced limited yesterday, didn't practice today, so tomorrow is the telling day. They play Monday night. So nothing definitive there, but Bowers doubtful doesn't sound good.
And I think we can fire up George Kittle.
Right.
Paul, do you want to fire up? Have you ever fired up George Kittle in your life?
I've never had George Kittle on my team, so...
This is the time.
No, I've got George Kittle. Make me an offer.
Paul can't have him if you have him.
We have him. Owen and I. We jointly run this team. Although
Hold
I didn't.
Look, I wish you would have told me that we were going to do a fantasy segment here and not a hockey segment, because I would have been really looking forward to it all day, especially doing it with you.
Wow.
I'm not sure I can unravel that.
I'm not sure I want to pivot to hockey, because it sounds like you're going to be sad if we talk about the Sabres, and I don't want sad Paul.
Yeah, was that the point?
what's happening now?
I have no plans for a whole segment here. I've got the whole weekend to talk to myself. So you can call me if you want, but
Paul,
a Kittle update.
I need you here, bro. I don't need you opening the door to an entire fantasy segment.
Oh, I think it'd be a lot of fun.
It is sometimes fun. Great. Anyway, the Sabres start 0-3 and then blow out Ottawa on Wednesday night. How good of a performance was Wednesday?
Well, once it got going in the second period, the first period actually wasn't really too much better than what we had seen. They had 3 shots on goal, none 5-on-5. All 3 came on a power play, which they scored on, by the way. They didn't have any 5-on-5 shots at all. And the goal they scored was a shot that went over the net, hit the back glass, came back, hit the back of the goalie, and went in. So that's one of the 3 shots that they had. And it got going basically because the Sabres had a parade to the penalty box.
Yeah.
You know, Byram got a penalty. Ottawa scores. Nobody really sees the puck. I won't say nobody. I had said to Brian right away, I said, that went in the net. I mean, I could see it from a top that it went in. And then all of a sudden the fans weren't too happy about it.
Oh, the scramble goal there where the puck weakened through his skates? Yeah.
And then Lindy Ruff challenges it for goaltender interference. That makes the fans angrier.
Yeah.
And then Lindy Ruff takes a penalty because it's not.
Yeah.
They decide it's not goaltender interference. And then Alex Tuck takes a penalty, which the fans didn't like at all. So you could feel the building getting edgy.
It was, yeah, it's 2-1 at that point, right?
Right.
And it felt like the game was teetering.
Right. But the fans were getting mad at the refs. And when that happens, you start getting energy in the building.
Okay.
And then on the Tuck penalty is when they get the shorthanded
goal.
McLeod
scores the shorty, yeah.
Yeah, the place just erupts. And they go from there, and then they play exactly the way Lindy Ruff wants them to play, with speed. There were guys all over around the net. You know, they were winning battles. They were getting to the battles first. They were winning the battles. They were playing hard. It just changed everything. And that's exactly the way he wants them to play. And if anytime they want to play a hockey game like they did the last 40 minutes of that game, they'll be in any game and win a lot of hockey games.
We'll get to Benson, who made his season debut, and what a great night it was for him with four assists. Paul, I thought, especially the front part of the game, Josh Doan was, I felt like, in the middle of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, he just really – and there was even – before the onslaught started, there's a back check that he makes that I'm just like, this guy is just – he's just a dog. I mean, he is just laying it out there. He's got to be on a fast track to becoming a fan favorite.
Well, that was exactly – and that's exactly what I told you when they traded for you. I said one of the things – I said, I don't know – there could be an upside scoring. I don't know if we're going to see the upside or not. But what I can tell you is he will be in the middle of everything. That's exactly how I put it, just exactly how you put it, Bulldog. You know, he's going to be in the middle of a forecheck. He's going to be in the middle of scrums. He's going to be in front of the net. He's going to be hard to knock down. He's going to be slapping people around in front of the net. He's going to get under their skin. He's going to be first in on the forecheck. You know, he's going to be the type of player that I think people of – in Buffalo are really going to enjoy watching play. Now, is there an upside scoring? He had three assists. Now, those aren't goals, but assists are just as good as goals. If you're leading two goals,
right,
it doesn't matter who really scores them. You know, I think he's made a very good first impression. It wasn't just this game either. I mean, he's pretty much made an impression. I mean, almost every game I've watched him so far of the four. And, you know, he's going to be a guy I think people in this town enjoy.
And I guess for anyone who, while the Sabres were floundering and they're, you know, losing their first three games, that wanted to say, oh, come on, Zach Benson's that important? I mean, I don't know. Wednesday's pretty strong, compelling evidence that he is that important.
Well, I was concerned. I talked to you guys about this, about, you know, you got to have more than 28 points if you're going to play in the top six.
Right.
And that was the only concern of his game that I had. Nothing else about his game I don't have any concern about at all. But it's just like – and I always felt that there is an upside to him and, you know, he's going to get his points eventually. It's just he's got to learn how to get the points in the National Hockey League and get a little confidence in his offense. Well, he shows up and he's exactly what the Sabres weren't doing in the first three games. I mean, his game is just like Doan's game, but he's a little more of the rat than Doan is. I mean, he will absolutely get under the other team's skin, and they'll be chasing him all over the ice. And, you know, that's exactly what the dose of Zach Benson is exactly what this team needed. And then it gets a little contagious. It's like, well, if Doan can do it and Benson can do it, I guess I can do it too. And, you know, now you've got a bunch of guys hanging around the net and a bunch of guys screening the goaltender and a bunch of guys going to the corner and winning battles and a bunch of guys jumping into scrums. And it just becomes a contagious thing. And next thing you know, he's got, well, we thought three assists. It was about 11:30 at night he got the fourth. All of a sudden they changed the scoring. It was the second goal by Quinn where they added an assist to him. So that's where he picked up. I asked him today, I said, all right, you had 98 points in your last year in junior. I said, you would have had to have four assists somewhere, wouldn't you? And he goes, oh, that's a good question. He goes, I don't know. He goes, yeah, wouldn't you think? He goes, I had like 62 assists or whatever. And I go, well, you would think you'd had 4 in a game. He goes, yeah, you would think that because I can't remember if I did or I didn't.
Yeah. I wonder if they might have given him some assists at 11:30 some night and he didn't know it.
Right. Well, Paul, that line, at least on Wednesday, was Benson with Thompson and Tuck. And practice was a little different today. Kulik, after being, I don't know, you tell us what was going on with Kulik during the week, because I heard Lindy talk about it, and I'm not sure if they were just making an example out of him or mad at how he was playing or what was going on there, but he was back up top today centering Thompson and Benson, wasn't he?
He was there at some points during the Ottawa game, too, okay. once Danforth went out.
Oh, that's right.
They were the struggle forward.
Yeah.
So I think they might have finished the game that way with him at center. And excuse me one second. It was in practice before the Ottawa game. He was centering Gertsen and Greenway, which means he wasn't playing.
Right.
You know, he was on the fifth line. And, you know, Lindy will do that sometimes, and it doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to play the next day. And Lindy said, it's not been good enough. It hasn't even been remotely good enough, you know, the way he's played. And he goes, I wanted to see how he would react to it. And I don't know if he's going to play tomorrow, was what he said after practice. And
on Tuesday, right?
Yeah. And then the game rolled around, and he decided he's going to play him. And he goes, hey, I want to see his response. And quite frankly, it wasn't very good. He was -2 on the game. I don't think he played all that well. I don't think he improved at all. And he did get the open net goal, the empty net goal. So maybe that will get him going, just to see a puck go into the net. With Danforth out, and Lindy said afterwards, since he was asked, what did you think of Kulik? And he's like, huh? It's all right. Yeah, he wasn't real thrilled about it. I understand why. I wouldn't have been real thrilled about it either if I was him. The kid's just not even close to what he was last year when he finished up. He's not playing well, and it's not – and he was careful to say, and he's right – he said, we're not blaming him. It's not all, this isn't about him. Like, he's the one that's holding everybody back. But you have 23 roster spots. You can't bench 8 guys. You know, that was just the one he just felt was really underperforming. So that was the one he took on. And, but he's not, quote, benched because he is going to be centering Benson. And now, this is the first time he's centered Benson and Thompson this year. He centered them a lot last year, and it went really, really well.
Right.
He was centering Zucker and Thompson while Benson was hurt. So we'll see how that goes and where that goes, and it allows Tuck to go to another line, because Tuck and McLeod, I thought, looked really good together once they got rolling in the second period. That after that timeout, you know, Lindy, that was a great timeout by Lindy Ruff because it was slipping.
Yeah,
we've seen right. that movie times?
Yeah, for sure. 5-2 to 5-4, like, oh, yeah.
And next
hold
thing
on.
You know, you're down 6-5.
Right.
And, you know, so he called the timeout that used to drive me insane, you know, how Granato would end with the game with his timeout when he could have called it and maybe done what Lindy Ruff did. And Lindy Ruff, if he wasn't really like screaming at his players. He basically was telling them, look, you guys are acting like you don't want the puck. He goes, want the puck, want to play with speed, want to keep going the way you were going. He goes, come on, just go get the puck and go with it. It took 17 seconds for Tuck and McLeod to look like they were shot out of cannons, come roaring up the ice, and you know McLeod comes down with speed down the middle. They can't keep up with him. Tuck lays a perfect pass over to him, and it's in the net. And it took 17 seconds to do it. So, you know, I thought Tuck and McLeod looked like a pretty good combination once the team got going in the second period.
Quickly, Paul, what's the timetable, if you know, on Luukkonen, and what changes when he's ready?
What changes is I think he'll wind up with a rehab assignment in Rochester, and that absolutely would be the right thing to do. He's played one period since April, you know, so he hasn't really had much of a training camp. You know, he's practicing, doing well. But and Lindy said that's a possibility. You know, he didn't want to totally commit to it. Yeah. But that's what makes sense is, you know, I would send him down there. But let's say they have, you know, the 3 games in 3. You can do that in the AHL. We'll have him play Friday, Sunday, get a couple of games in. You know, but I think that would be the way to go, and I would be surprised if that's not the way they go.
Yeah, they haven't had any back-to-backs yet, so Lyon has played them all. But, I mean, and again, this week, they don't have a back-to-back until next Friday, Saturday, right? Toronto Friday here and then in Toronto Saturday. I'm just wondering, like, how long has it been since Lyon has played this many games in a row?
It's been a while. You know what? If I were the coach of the Sabres, I wouldn't want Ellis's first game in a back-to-back with Toronto. I would put Ellis in Montreal if it were me. And I asked Lindy about that today. He goes, well, yeah, anything's possible. It's a possibility because I'm worried about tomorrow's game, and then after tomorrow's game, I'll think about that.
Yeah.
So he did leave the door open for that. I would rather he start against the Montreal Canadiens than the Toronto Maple Leafs. Even if he plays the back-to-back against Toronto,
right.
I wouldn't want that to be his first NHL game.
Gotcha, right.
So that's how I would do it. Because you want Lyon to play against the Red Wings. I'm sure he would like to play against the Red Wings. So the Montreal game is what would make sense to me.
Thanks for this, Paul. Have a nice weekend.
You too, guys. Take care.
There you go. That's our man, Paul Hamilton, on the Wester Hotline. And Paul's appearances with us are always brought to you by Equitable Advisors. Planning for your future is about more than just money. Let Equitable be your guide. And by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this.
Florida tomorrow afternoon, 12:30? Or is that Monday? It was 12:30.
Monday, I think 1 o'clock is what I said.
1 o'clock?
Tomorrow, yeah. Yeah, right. 1 o'clock is correct.
So pregame at noon.
Right.
Then off to Montreal Monday night. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Football Friday, as we call it. Coming up with more, we've got picks at 6. This is WGR.
Get back with more of Sabres Live. Presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Happy Mumford & Sons Day at KeyBank Center tonight. And we're just a few weeks away from another big event. We want you to enter now for a chance to win a team-signed jersey from both teams that are participating in the Rivalry Series matchup, Team USA, Team Canada, women's hockey. The next step in this rivalry as we inch closer to the Olympic Games takes place right here, KeyBank Center. Tuesday, November 8th, tickets are available now. And for your chance to win the team-signed jerseys, visit sabres.com/enter. What do you think, Marty?
I think I want to enter. Am I allowed to?
You're not a... Are you a collector?
So here's the thing. I played with Rob Ray, and Rob Ray was a massive collector.
He's
of
a hoarder.
Everything. He's a hoarder, but he's also is a stealer because he stole some of my gear from my, from my stall. Like, I'm like, where's my dark blue blocker and glove that I had stashed underneath my stall? And then I went to Razor's house and it's in his attic. So, but I tried to start collecting things and then I gave up, and I should never have given up, but I have a few. I have a Dave Andrechuk stick, I have a Donald Odette stick, I have a Gilmore stick. That year, I collected a few things, and then I didn't do it again. So,
Did you think the end was near at that point? Is that why you were collecting that year?
No, somebody told me, do it early on and collect every year, right. And then I just did it for the 1 year, and then I didn't do it anymore.
Hockey insider Darren Dreger from TSN is with us. Dregs, were you a collector at any point?
No, not really. Back in the early days of the hockey cards, I had a few, but then I realized that what I thought were not so good cards, and I can't really think of a good example. Brad Park maybe comes to mind.
Sure.
But if you found a way to clip them into your spokes of your bike, they made a real cool motor sound. So it didn't take me long to rip through a good collection of hockey cards. So no, not really. No, I wasn't much of a collector.
They were also really good for playing, like, instead of playing the bubble hockey, you use the nets and you use the puck, but you use cards, hockey cards, to play, like, on the floor.
Yeah.
So you, like, that was good. But then they would get a really good bend in them, and the corners were wrecked. But, funny enough, my dad tried to collect, like, when I started having hockey cards, he's like, I'm going to go to the card shows and whatever, and I'm going to get every single one of your cards.
Yeah.
That's impossible. Like, I'm no Wayne Gretzky, but still, like, there's so many different variations of cards he's like, this one has a gold, a blue, a silver, a 1 out of 30, a 1 out of 100. Like, he's like, I quit. So he started it, but then he quit also. So Me and my dad, both collectibles quitters.
Well, obviously, it's an interesting start to the season, Dregs. You know, in small sample sizes, people really react, if not overreact, to two wins in a row, three losses in a row, all of that. Buffalo's in the win column after an 8-4 win over Ottawa, a team that is now lost three in a row. But there were so many scorers on the sheet for Buffalo last night. Alex Tuch finds himself as one of those players, and this market continues to be interested in what's next for Tuch and the Sabres.
Yeah, and I get that. You know, when you get through some of the mega deals that we've already seen, minus, of course, Connor McDavid, which is the outlier, then there is another tier of these players that need contractual attention. And Alex Tuch is right near the top of the list for me. Adrian Kempe in LA is another. I wish I could tell Sabres fans, yep, they're working hard, they're grinding away on this thing in negotiation, but that's not true. But I wouldn't look at it as a negative either, that they're not in heavy lifting negotiations, because, you know, the club has made it clear to the Tuch camp that they'd like to sign him. Alex Tuch has made it clear that he's open to extending in Buffalo. But you do have to take the start of the season as a factor, maybe not a primary influence, but, you know, what if a slow start turns into another, you know, abysmal 10, 15, 20 games into the start of the regular season? Okay, well, maybe Tuch's view is a little bit different at that point. And maybe management has to look at Alex Tuch as a significant asset, because in the insider business, there is never a shortage of finding general managers who are looking for that type of player, obviously, in season. It doesn't happen very often in the first half of the year. And then, of course, you look into the second half and you look towards the NHL trade deadline. So I think for the moment, it's more likely that Alex Tuch extends in Buffalo. But let's see how much relief the Sabres get from that one-game win over a pretty good Ottawa Senators team. You know, banged up, of course, without Brady Tkachuk. But why can't they build off an 8-4 win? They certainly can.
Yeah, they can. Let me ask you this, though. So Kaprizov goes to $17 million, but McDavid takes $12.5 million. So you're like, okay, those are – let's throw them in the garbage. But obviously the Eichel deal. Kyle Connor deal. Like, it brought the market back to a place where we thought it was going to be. So, you know, when I thought of Tuch, you know, originally it was like maybe in the 8.5 to 9, and there's talks of maybe it's, you know, double digit, like 10 plus. Like, where do you sense that the market is going to go for Kempe and Tuch and those that second tier player?
I mean, I feel like it's got to be up around the 10 million range.
Okay.
You know, again, you're simply projecting. And if you're Tuch or you're Kempe and you're looking at a long-term deal here, which they would be, of course, you know, you are projecting beyond what next year is. I had a GM suggest to me that there's a sense the cap could claw up to $107 million next year. Well, it's slated for 104, and then the year after 120. Well, it's slated for 113. And just to be clear, you know, I checked with NHL sources and they said, no, there's no truth to that. That could be wishful thinking by some player agents that, well, what if this happens? Well, the league right now is saying we haven't talked to the Players Association, so there's no reality to that. But what you're doing is projecting. So if you're Alex Tuch, is 8.5 getting it done? When 4 years from now, maybe that salary cap is around $120 million. And the answer to that is it probably isn't enough. And look, there was some pushback. You know, we mentioned Eichel and we mentioned Kyle Connor. And I do think that there was at least a hint of influence. As soon as McDavid got the 2 years at 12 and a half, that brought, you know, maybe some of the other projections back into reality. There's no way that Kyle Connor thought he was getting anywhere near $15 million. He knew that. But I can tell you, all along, that negotiation in Winnipeg was more about what does the structure look like? Is Winnipeg finally willing to give in on signing bonus money, which they did? But all along, the AAV target was the minor deal in Vegas. Well, Kyle Connor got basically what Marner got in Vegas, right? So that tells me that neither the McDavid deal nor the Kaprizov deal with the Minnesota Wild really had any impact in what Jack Eichel signed for, what Kyle Connor got with the Jets.
Is signing bonus money? Because we look at Lane Hudson, right? Yeah. Like Jackson Lacombe gets $9 million and Luke Hughes get $9 million, but they get $9 million a year moving forward. Where Lane Hudson gets, what is it, 12 in the first year, but it's $11 million bonus. So on July 1 next year, $11 million. And then on July 1 the year after, $11 million. So in the first calendar year, he'll get $24 million instead of the 18, right?
Right.
So is signing bonus now back to where it was? Because it went away for a little bit. Like, and it doesn't matter on signing bonus, but now it seems like it's the one thing players are asking for.
Absolutely. And look, I think it was reported, but I know it to be fact, so I'll share it. I didn't at the time because, I was asked not to. But I know the Winnipeg Jets did talk with their key guys, right? They talked to Scheifele, Hellebuck, Josh Morrissey, to just let them know, look, when we get this Kyle Connor deal done, and it was probably just before he signed, it's likely going to include signing bonus. Are you guys fine with that? Are you okay with that? Well, because Hellebuck didn't get it. Scheifele didn't get it. And Morrissey probably said, well, I'm 100% on board with it because my deal is coming up and I'm going to get it, right? So sure, it matters. It matters a lot. And, you know, to go back to Lane Hudson, again, it was reported that the Montreal Canadiens offered an original deal where he could have got more money in the grand scheme of things, but there was a deferred money element to it. And I know, because I know the agents who work inside Cortex, who represents Lane Hudson, vehemently opposed to the deferral as an option. And I would be too. If I were a player, I would want, if I'm in a position where I can demand $11 million or in Eichel's case, 16 and change for the first 3 years, at 4 years maybe of that contract, right? In signing bonus money, I'm taking my cash now and I'm going to do with it whatever I want, not spend it. I'm saying invest it and do whatever. The deferral option for young guys makes no sense to me. None. Doesn't make any sense. So signing bonus is just the reality. It's like the no trade and the no move clauses, right? Everybody can demand them when you've got a market and you have that type of leverage.
So there are a few teams that are, struggling. Calgary's one of them. They've lost four in a row. We mentioned Huberdeau not in the lineup, so that hurts. But Rasmus Anderson was a big talking point in the offseason. So what does the challenging start for Calgary mean for their makeup?
Yeah. Well, I think predictably we all expected it was going to be a challenge for Calgary this year. But we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. No different than Buffalo or any club that struggled. It is a long 82-game regular season, so we can't write them off just yet. But you wondered whether or not the Rasmus Anderson thing would become a distraction. I don't think that it has, but it can't be moving forward. We wondered where the offense was going to come from. Is Nazem Kadri going to carry that load? Coronado had a good year last year. Can he duplicate that? I mean, they have some interesting offensive pieces. And then Dustin Wolf, of course, has got to have the type of year that he had. Their goaltending in general. And that's a lot to ask because many of those pieces fell into the puzzle last year to make it interesting. And it doesn't look from the early goings here that that is going to happen again. So what we're fixated on, is what is Craig Conroy going to do? And is he more likely to try and peddle off Rasmus Anderson? Not this early, but when you get to the U.S. Thanksgiving mark, you even get to Christmas, and you're by far a non-playoff contending team. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you are better off to, try and move a primary asset. And maybe there's a team out there, I'm sure they've already presented their interest and offers, perhaps, on Anderson to Craig Conroy. It goes, okay, well, I'd rather have him for a full second half of the regular season. So in that case, I am going to overpay to acquire him. So there's lots of storylines to follow with the Flames.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of moving parts that could happen in the next little bit here. Florida, obviously, no Barkov, no Tkachuk. There's injuries. Now, Brady Tkachuk is getting a second opinion, and the word is maybe today that we'll find out. So when the Sabres play the Ottawa Senators next, which is December 23rd, 2 months from now, is Brady Tkachuk playing? Is he just returning to the action? What do you think the timeline for his right wrist arm injury is going to be?
Yeah, I think it's going to be in that 8-week vicinity. I really do. Again, we're waiting official confirmation from the Ottawa Senators whether or not surgery is happening. You know, we'll find that out in the hours ahead here. But this isn't going to be a 4-week deal like Travis Green suggested it could be. Mm-hmm. Now, he was just dealing with the information he had at the time. And we know that Brady Tkachuk has sought a second opinion. But that's an enormous hole. And now you start to question, okay, well, how strong is he going to be for the Olympics, depending on the significance of this issue and whether surgery is required? What does Steve Staios and the Ottawa Senators do? You don't replace Brady Tkachuk. You don't, obviously. And they've struggled. I mean, you know, you guys saw it last night. Green keeps hoping that the chemistry is going to evolve. They get Drake Batherson back, so he is definitely going to help moving forward. But it right now is chemistry and execution and the lack in both. So Steve Staios is hoping internally that they can figure it out, because there is no quick fix. But I could also see Staios, you know, getting into that realm of shopping for something much bigger up front in the weeks ahead.
Well, Pinto is now tied for the league goal scoring lead with 5. And I thought Stützle was absolutely flying last night. He missed a couple of glorious opportunities, but man, does he look good. And Darren, we will talk to you next week. Thank you very much.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
And we want to remind you to bid now on game-worn jerseys for the 24-25 season. Proceeds benefiting the Sabres Foundation. You can visit sabres.com/auction today. It closes, the auction does, on October the 19th. Back after this on Sabres Live.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns.
And you're seeing exactly what people outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. That seemed, I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air, and we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.